Hello, and thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Pineapple Classrooms. My name is Kathy Wolf-James, and I am the editor and host of Pineapple Classrooms, a project that works to bring Albuquerque teachers together through shared stories and honest conversations. Teachers who are interviewed on the podcast are nominated by their peers, their friends, and their family. So please hop onto the website, pineappleclassrooms.com, and nominate somebody you know who is fantastic and doing great things in their classroom. On this week's episode, I am very excited to interview Cruz Ortiz, who is a science teacher at Ernie Pyle Middle School. And for me, I have not been in a middle school since I was a student in middle school, so it was a jump out of my comfort zone that really allowed me to learn more about behavior management and student engagement from a teacher with a very different perspective. And Cruz uses some incredible technological tools to make all this happen in his science classroom. So let's dive in, shall we? Every week, we will feature an educator in Albuquerque. This week, I'm at Ernie Pyle Middle School, sitting with Cruz Ortiz in his beautiful classroom. Cruz was recommended by Cassandra Cisneros, who is a resource teacher for Albuquerque Public Schools. Cruz, did Cassandra tell you why she nominated you?
No, she didn't.
She actually sent a message this week on why she nominated you. I'd like to play it for you now.
Hi, I'm Cassandra Cisneros, and I nominated the amazing Cruz Ortiz for Pineapple Classrooms because he is an education innovator. When watching him teach, he is incredible on so many levels. One thing that really struck my colleague and myself is his classroom management. Students have really clear expectations and routines, and technology enhances these. Students come in, they log in, and then Mr. Ortiz uses the Promethean board to engage his class while the laptops load. And he really uses the Promethean board at a very sophisticated level. Then he incorporates technology throughout the period to instruct and engage. I really believe we can all learn something from Mr. Ortiz.
Cruz, what's your reaction to that?
Oh, well, I'm quite honored that she nominated me for this. I didn't expect it coming, and it's nice to be recognized.
Absolutely, and I'm looking around Cruz's classroom right now, and sure enough, the Promethean board is set up, ready to go for a class. What other technology do you use in your classroom?
Well, I use laptops. I have an assigned mobile lab, and I also have access to iPads. Being part of the Vanguard last year really helped me take my technology use to the next level. At first, I didn't know how to use iPads in the classroom, and now I can use them for science labs in new and innovative ways.
Absolutely. Do you have any favorite resources that go along with those technology tools?
Oh, absolutely. There's tons of them. I could spend all day going over resources for technology. My favorite right now is Edmodo, just because it kind of mimics Facebook, and students really respond well to that. And I connect it with Google, so students are able to do work on Google and connect it to Edmodo. I like to use a lot of videos as well to enhance learning and really get students to remember the content.
Absolutely. Imagine your students absolutely love that.
Yes, they really do. At first, they're a little afraid to record themselves, but once they get comfortable and put on their headphones, they kind of forget that everyone else is watching or listening and really take it to the next level.
So, Cruz, what are you most passionate about as an educator?
I think it's blending, you know, education with technology. I really love technology. I didn't grow up with technology when I went to school. I kind of got into it really late. And I just see the power of it in the science classroom, being able to connect to students in a way that they enjoy working with technology and learn the content at the same time without even knowing they're learning science.
Right. I mean, I think about my own, like, education and, like, as a child, I think the coolest thing was Oregon Trail. Mm-hmm. And that was so engaging. It was, like, just inherently engaging for us. I don't think I learned a lot, but I was engaged. So how do you make that leap from engagement to meaningful learning?
That's a good question. I think it boils down to really developing a curriculum where students use technology on a daily basis to enhance what they're learning in the classroom. An example of this would be, like, instead of handing out a worksheet to learn about the fossil types, students create videos explaining how to make fossils using manipulatives such as clay and other objects.
Absolutely. When you are doing this in the classroom, are there ever any times where it flops or you think, oh, that didn't go quite how I planned?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think the major problem is the technology itself sometimes. Wi-Fi is always an issue.
Oh, my goodness.
You always have to have backup plans for that. Sometimes it's going well in the morning and the afternoon, no Wi-Fi. So you have to think up quickly on your feet and think of another plan for teaching the students using technology.
How do the students react in those moments?
Usually some come up with solutions on their own, and it really helps, you know, make it flow a little easier. Sometimes they're, you know, in complete terror. They don't know what to do because their computer has shut down on them and they think they've lost all their work.
Right, yeah. I can empathize mm-hmm. with that. So are there any lessons that you find yourself teaching every year because the students respond so positively towards them?
I think it boils down to fossils. Students really love fossils and dinosaurs, and they really respond well to that. And teaching them in the past, I was kind of limited. When I first started teaching, didn't have as much technology as I have today. So it was mostly worksheets, book work, but now I'm able to use technology to help them really gain an understanding of fossil types, the geologic time scale, and Earth's history.
Are there ever any times where you feel burnt out as an educator?
Oh, yes, definitely. I think we get overwhelmed by all the demands that the state and the district puts on us, that at times I just don't have enough energy, but usually make it through it. Students always lift your spirits with their work and their enthusiasm.
Absolutely. I find, like, when I am feeling burnt out like that, and if I bring it back to the classroom, like, that feeling at all, that it gets pushed back at me by the students. Like, they are going to read you. They know what you're feeling, and especially, like, I teach second graders, so 7 and 8. So if they see me uneasy, they feel uneasy. So it was really hard to find that energy for the students. Do you see that with middle schoolers? Like, it's vastly different, I imagine.
Oh, no, I definitely see that with middle schoolers. I think they sense you and sense your moods and react to the way you come to the classroom. I know when I first started teaching, you know, I was really getting burnt out because it's just really overwhelming. So I decided that I needed to set time aside for myself as well as my classroom. So I made a strict rule for myself of, you know, 1 hour a week after school, that's all I would spend on planning or my classroom. Mm-hmm. And then I would take the weekend off. And that seems to be working really well for me. And I don't feel as stressed or as overwhelmed anymore.
Are there certain times of the year where that rule kind of goes out the window?
Yes, right before testing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think all teachers experience that. It's towards the end of the year, testing cycle has come, and you're just stressed.
Right. Report cards for me.
The same here. Getting grades done just in time for report card windows can also be stressful.
Do you have any tricks during that time, or is it just get through it?
Usually the systems I have in place for grading work really well for me. I grade on a weekly basis, so my kids can track their progress. They have graphs in their interactive science notebooks for every week. They go in and mark their percent in the class so they know exactly where they are, and they're able to really think about, you know, what are they doing right and what do they need to change.
That's awesome. That is so cool. Are they setting goals for themselves too?
I don't set weekly goals or have my students set weekly goals, but they set a goal every 5 weeks. So we reflect on their learning at the 5th week, and we decide, like, what do you need to do to improve yourself? So it really helps me target those students who are struggling and make sure that by report card time they aren't failing.
That's amazing. I mean, I do like little things that look a little bit like that, but just to see like it scaled up to students who are more capable of like actually that monitoring, it all feels very fruitful.
Yeah, it is. And it actually takes a lot of training to train the students how to track their progress and really think about, you know, what they're doing in the classroom and how it affects their grade.
That's amazing. Thank you.
No problem.
When you are doing these projects that are integrating technology, why is that important for our students?
I think technology really helps students make those connections to the content in a way that they understand. They love using technology, and having technology and using it for educational purposes is new to them because they're used to just getting on it to play video games. But when they start learning new things, you see them start helping each other out and learning the content without really knowing that they're learning it. I've had students who didn't know anything about computers, and by the end of the year, they're, you know, proficient at opening a Google document and submitting it to me for grading.
So skills that they need to learn.
Yes.
What about connections to the outside world? Does technology fill any?
So in my training last year as part of the Vanguard cohort, we learned about this SAMR model, and this was totally new to me, how to connect technology to teaching. And I found that I was on the lower end of the SAMR model and mostly substituting technology for a routine task that you can do with, say, bookwork or a worksheet. And I really wanted to move to that higher end of redefinition and getting students to connect the content to a real-world application. So right now I have this amazing lab set up in my classroom where the students are doing lab safety, but they're using technology to learn about lab safety. So I have a crime scene set up, and they have to take pictures of the crime scene, and then they have to do a little detective work to figure out exactly what my mannequin did wrong. His name is Bob. And they have to identify all the rules that he's following and all the rules that he's broken.
I'm craning my neck over. Like, it's amazing. We'll post a picture of this on the blog. When does technology take the four walls that are in your classroom and break them down and open up your students' world?
I think that goes back to the SAMR model with redefinition, where you actually start connecting the content technology to the community and the outside world. Possibly, you know, this lab safety activity I have set up, maybe making a connection with, you know, Sandia National Labs or some kind of other science institution where they make videos and send to the kids, and the kids have to respond to an actual scientist. And I think that's what would really break down those four walls and make learning more realistic to them.
Absolutely. I feel like virtual field trips really take it to that next level when you're able to get a peek into a professional lab. It's not just this abstract idea anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
You mentioned earlier you use technology to also fill in gaps where you don't have the equipment in your lab, but you know you want your students to have experience with it. Is there a favorite activity or tool that you find online?
There's a lot of resources out there, some teacher-created resources that I've come across that I really enjoy. I like to do a lot of virtual labs for chemicals because, unfortunately, we don't have a large chemical stock here, so mixing of chemicals is a lot easier to do using virtual labs, and students can see exothermic and endothermic reactions and not have the danger in the science lab.
That's amazing. Do you have a favorite success story that sticks out in your mind?
Yes, I actually do. I think the greatest success story I have is, you know, my first year teaching, having those students come back who have graduated to thank me, to check in on me, to see how I'm doing, and remind me how much they've loved my classroom. It's just a really good feeling to have that come back to you and let you know that, hey, you're doing something really good.
And then to remember that on your bad days.
Yes, definitely, to pick you up on those times when you're really stressed out and on the edge of burnout.
Exactly. Do you have any advice for a teacher about to go into their first year?
Actually, yes. I think the key is don't be afraid to ask for help. As a first-year teacher, I was locked in my room and didn't really seek out help until another teacher at this school came up to me and offered to help me out. And it really changed my world, made me feel more comfortable, made me feel part of the community. So I guess that would be my advice to them is don't be afraid to ask for help. And if possible, find someone to mentor you through that first year because it is tough.
Absolutely. It can feel so isolating.
Oh, definitely it can.
So, like, going out of your way, even as a teacher who's not a first-year teacher, is incredibly important. Like, remember what it felt like.
Yes.
Remember that feeling and reaching out. It can be hard when we ourselves are on those days where we're feeling burnt out and tired.
Yeah, I think it's just good to have someone to talk to share lessons with, to get ideas from.
I think the benefit is mutual also. I think both people gain from that. Like reaching out to a new teacher.
Yes, I've spent the last 4 years with the APS mentoring program, and I would agree with you. You learn both ways. You're always learning when you're mentoring a teacher or being a mentee.
Absolutely. How do you welcome people into your classroom?
I've always had an open door policy. Parents, teachers, students, anyone's always welcome to come into my classroom. I love being observed because it gives me that feedback where I can improve my learning because that's where my teaching. I'm always trying to get to that next level and keep it interesting and fresh. I don't like doing the same things every year. I always change them up. Here at this school, we're lucky enough to have programs set in place like peer observations.
Wow.
To have other teachers come into classrooms, and I get to go view other classrooms and get fresh new ideas to put in my science classroom. Because we're always talking about incorporating language arts and social studies and math. And when you get out into another person's classroom, you get to see the teaching role from a different perspective and bring what you saw in that classroom back into yours to kind of mesh it all together.
That's my favorite kind of professional development. It's like, what do you notice? What do you see? And,
yes.
And then reflecting on your own practice. Oh my gosh. It's a dream. You're yes. Very lucky. Do you have any favorite resources that you use in your classroom?
So beyond technology, I like to use a lot of AVID strategies. A couple years back, I attended an AVID pathway training for science where I learned interactive science notebooks, and that really has helped me take my classroom to the next level. It's actually helped improve classroom management as well. Because students follow this strict routine every day where there's no time for there's no downtime. Students are engaged minute to minute. Transitions are smooth. My favorite AVID strategies, I would say, is Wicker. We do what's called Wicker Wednesday, where we focus on a Wicker strategy every Wednesday, such as writing, inquiry, collaboration, organization, or reading. And I teach the students different skills to help them write or read or organize. And it's been really successful.
And those strategies they can use across content level.
Oh, definitely, contents, yeah. Yes. You can use them in any content area. Other resources I like to use, of course, are any technology app that comes my way, and I've learned quite a bit. I'm currently in love with Google. Anything Google is my favorite right now. I still have to fall back on some Apple resources. Cassandra will be happy to know that. I love iMovie. I never knew how to use it in the classroom before.
My goodness, one of my favorites.
The Vanguard really helps students make those connections. But Google really is that method for creating a hybrid classroom where they're doing learning here and they can take the learning home.
Absolutely. A plug for GarageBand. Being used for this podcast right now.
Yeah, I haven't gone to that level of GarageBand yet. I usually take it slow and learn one at a time, and then when I'm proficient, I move on.
That's smart. Yeah, don't overwhelm yourself.
Oh, definitely.
Any other resources that you love?
I think the classroom management plan I've come up with has been really helpful for me. I think most first-year teachers can benefit from just hearing that you seriously need to just focus on one simple rule rather than a plethora of rules or, you know, 7 to 10 rules. I know there's many classroom management strategies out there, but really keeping it simple is the key to success. An example, my plan is I only have one rule in the classroom, and that rule is to treat everyone with respect. And I teach students what that means. I mean, you can put respect on anything from sharpening a pencil to going to the bathroom to interacting with your classmate. And students know the rule there. Well, what's our rule in the class? Well, it's to be respectful. Do you think you're being respectful right now? And treating students with the same respect that you want back. And it just makes the classroom community positive and focused and energetic. And you don't have to deal with any classroom management issues because students learn how to treat each other with respect.
That's amazing. Have you always worked with sixth graders?
No, actually, when I first started out, my student teaching I did in sixth grade, and then to find out I had a 7th through 12 license, so I didn't get to teach sixth grade. I really wanted to. But I've actually done 7th and 8th as well. I was lucky enough to do looping for my first year where I moved up with my kids. So I started in 7th and moved to 8th with them. And that was a really unique experience for me because I was able to see their growth for over 2 years and then really learn how the content changes over 2 years. And now I have this perspective all the way from 6th, 7th to 8th. So I know like what 6th graders are supposed to learn, what 7th graders are supposed to learn, and 8th in science.
And it changes, like the students themselves, they change so much in that time period.
Yes, they do, physically and behavior-wise as well as mentally.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Pineapple Classrooms. A big thank you to Chris and Cassandra for taking part in the Pineapple Classroom project. And please go to pineappleclassrooms.com and read the blog post that goes with this episode with more information about the interactive notebooks that Chris uses, some pictures of his classroom, and his favorite resources. Thank you and have a great week.